Friday, April 6, 2018. Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant, independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours. So what is it that stops certain individuals from acknowledging a blatant truth, from ignoring the reality of the situation at hand in favor of a more flowery fabrication that allows them to pretend they are ruled by an honor-bound collective of righteous leaders, forever putting their own interests on hold for those of the huddled masses? Despite this being laughably easy to recognize as not only naive, but historically inaccurate all the way back to the beginning. Can it be as simple as just not wanting to confront a hard reality? That they sleep better believing in the lie? To a degree, yes. But there is much more than that at play. Many of these individuals who consciously ignore facts and evidence that contradict their beliefs truly believe the falsities of their manufactured reality. One could even say they do so religiously. And this is what has stood out to me of late. As many of the independent media work day and night to expose the truth for the betterment of everyone, far too many today have been so intensely conditioned that it most resembles that of a cult. And many who understand what that truly means also understands how overwhelmingly hard it is to pull someone out of such a manipulation. This is what we face today. Literal brainwashing that has so many willing to outright ignore what we work so hard to show them. And not only ignoring the facts at hand, but also being unwilling to question what they are being given by those they have come to trust unconditionally, as well as being unwilling to use any critical thinking where these outlets are concerned. A story can be riddled with plot holes and lacking any evidence to back up the already flimsy story. Yet because it comes from their cult leader of news, they take it and run with it, outright ignoring anything that demonstrates how very misleading it truly is. And once the story is recanted by these cult leaders themselves, usually in a very inconspicuous way on the back page or buried way down the news feed, their faithful followers will carry on with the lie nonetheless, as they have been taught. All we can do, ultimately, is carry on, punching holes in their lies, and let those manipulated know that we're here for them, and always willing to help them regain their independence of thought, with no conditions, just the bare, naked truth. And a perfect example of exactly the kind of gaping plot holes in the establishment narrative that are simply being ignored is our first story of the day, coming out of collectiveevolution.com. Innocent email throws hashtag never again narrative into question. Soon after 17 people were killed in Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida, a group known as Never Again MSD emerged on social media. The group's Facebook page, for instance, run by survivors of the Stoneman Douglas shooting, was surprisingly up and running the following day, February 15th, complete with the popular hashtag Never Again. The students that comprise Never Again MSD are widely regarded as the initiators of the March for Our Lives gun control demonstrations that took place in Washington, D.C. and across the nation on March 24th. The march has now spawned many more initiatives that are fighting to end gun violence, or more to the point, end gun ownership of certain types altogether, as we discussed yesterday in the small town of Deerfield. On March 30th, blogger Dr. Erwin, if I'm saying her name correctly, wrote a post on the Fellowship of the Minds website that suggests that plans for these demonstrations were initiated long before the Parkland shooting. The evidence? A statement in an email sent to a source of European researcher Ole Damgaard by Officer Scott C. Earnhardt of the Homeland Security Bureau of the Metropolitan Police Department. It reads, in reference to your inquiry concerning the March for Our Lives demonstration here in the District of Columbia on March 24, 2018, MPD received a permit application several months prior to the actual event, and there was several months of planning for this large event. If a permit application for the march was received several months prior to the actual event, then the notion of March for Our Lives springing from a spontaneous grassroots initiative by high school students is completely destroyed. But it's not just that. It also gives added weight to suspicions that the entire Parkland shooting was a false flag event. Now, this does not inherently prove that this was a false flag, however, which, by the way, doesn't inherently imply that no one was hurt, only that to one degree or another, this was planned, staged, or allowed to be carried out. But at the very least, this shows us that this was not a grassroots uprising, but rather a planned political movement. The fact that they requested this permit months in advance very clearly shows you that at the very least this was being planned. And so it wasn't some spur of the moment rise to, you know, stand against something that they were, you know, that they felt was a big issue of the day. Clearly this was organized prior to it. And that has to rise in our minds, at least the possibility that this was some kind of orchestrated event, as we proved many times in the past, is something that has very much happened across the world and very much in our own history in this country. But I should point out, Brian Richmond, someone who I've worked with in the past, recently made a very excellent point that these organizations do this. They essentially grab up all kinds of permits and things they can ahead of time for the, you know, just in case they want to do an event. And as much as that may seem a little lofty, I do agree that that does happen. But the point here is that regardless, you know, just put the false flag idea aside for a minute. At the very least, we should be analyzing this point and looking further to really recognize the fact that the idea of this grassroots movement is something that's being heavily pushed by the vast majority of mainstream media that support this movement, because they don't want you to think this is some kind of political orchestrated idea, or that these main high school leaders are people that are being pushed into the limelight in order to carry out a political agenda. Clearly something we've talked about many times, the idea of, you know, repealing the Second Amendment, which we just saw a DNC leader tweet out. But we have to see that to some degree, we're not getting all the facts here. And as I always say, that in and of itself is very important. Simply being able to recognize that we're being led a false story reveals quite a few things. But again, like I said in the very beginning, we have to recognize that this shows you a point that is very relevant, that is being reflexively dismissed simply because it doesn't align with what they believe to be the truth, regardless of the facts at hand. And of course, accompanied with all the following outrage that anyone would dare question something, you know, calling on the death of these children, which is absolutely abhorrent when you really realize what they're doing. But again, this is a story that I really think everyone should look into and understand that, you know, all of the other information we could discuss, which the article does get into about false flags and the history of it and how it applies to this shooting. And as I've said in the past about the FBI and their verifiable record of creating these kind of events so they can then stop them, the article does an excellent job of really just analyzing the point, the one point about the email and what that truly means. And it has to show us that there's something not right in this story. So I highly recommend you all dig into this. Moving on to the next story, which was more of a press release by the White House, and it was covered by many different mainstream outlets. And I found it to be wildly revealing and just offensive in many different ways. But essentially, the White House put out a press release calling on Gaza demonstrators to stay clear of the border. And it was covered by all kinds of different outlets. But the point here is that we have continued to demonstrate, regardless of the facts at hand, that the Israeli forces are literally killing unarmed protesters, regardless of the actions of Palestinians. And like I've said, there's probably violent people in these demonstrations, like they're all, you know, and ignoring for the moment the idea of any kind of agent provocateurs being involved. The point is that they're killing unarmed civilians. And it's happened over and over. It's been demonstrated numerous times. But instead of addressing that fact, or even giving both sides of the story, the White House comes out and calls on the very protesters being shot down and saying, you need to stay away from the border, instead of saying Israelis should be condemned for their atrocious human rights violations and war crimes. But that's not what we're seeing. And I think this, again, just has to, and I've pointed this out a few times in the last few weeks, but we have to begin to see the hypocrisy at play here and the fact that they're very clearly taking sides in this debate and just leaving out an entire side of the story. And as again, going back to the beginning, plenty of people are going to see this and just immediately go with the mainstream narrative because they've been conditioned to do so. Which leads perfectly into the next story from theantimedia.com, unarmed Gaza protesters murdered by Israeli forces. Last Friday, March 30th, Israeli snipers raised their rifles repeatedly and from behind a wall buffer and an electrified fence, opened fire on the Palestinians. And before I move forward, that in of itself, you have to realize they're completely safe. They're behind these electrified fences and their buffer. And even if there's violent protesters, the fact that they're opening fire is absolutely crazy. But it goes on to make the point that these protesters were unarmed and they're literally shooting them, as we've seen many times in the past. The latest deaths are likely to add to international concerns over the violence, which human rights groups have said involved live fire against demonstrators posing no immediate threat to life. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres has called for an independent investigation into the deaths on the first day of the protest last Friday, and an Israeli rights group urged Israeli soldiers to, quote, refuse to open fire on unarmed demonstrators. Orders to do so were manifestly illegal, it said. The United States, however, directed its criticism at the protest leaders. Quote, we condemn leaders and protesters who call for violence or who send protesters, including children, to the fence, knowing that they may be injured or killed. Now, there is some logic to the idea that it's kind of terrible for, if that is the truth, that they're sending their children to the front line so they can then be, you know, so something like this could happen. But again, that completely ignores the larger point here, that these civilians are being fired upon regardless of why they're there and regardless of what their you know, the logic behind them being there. And again, we also have to understand the full story here and what's going on with these Palestinians and what they've been through and the fact that they're simply just fighting for their rights and the fact that they want to reunite with their family members that are on the other side. I honestly don't understand how people can continue not to see the real story at play here. And I mean, I honestly do think that the majority of people are beginning to see this for what it is, as well as the world stage beginning to call these things out, in particular things like Saudi Arabia and Israel, and as well as the United States drone bombing campaign that's killing untold civilians around the world, yet while they call out Syria for doing the same, you know, even when they have no evidence to do so, calling them out for even the slightest thing in regard to civilians dying, yet we can see these things happening all around the world at behest of the U.S. drone campaign. But the reality at play here with in regard to Israel is rather in regard to the United States and Israel, the fact that they're continuing to call out the Gazans to fall back from the border when they're fighting for their rights, yet they failed to call out Israel in any regard when they're opening fire on unarmed civilians. I just don't know how you can see this any other way. Moving on to the next story coming from RT.com, 75-4 and 80,945 against. Nestle allowed to pump more water in Michigan despite public outcry. Now, this has been an ongoing story, and it's one I'm touching on quickly, but I highly recommend you dig into. There's so much behind this, but the reality here is that, you know, and it ties back to the idea of Flint, Michigan, and the fact that that's still an ongoing problem, which is, it's interesting to see how that's just kind of no longer in the news, despite it never truly coming to any kind of conclusion. These people are still suffering from all, basically the actions of their own government, choosing to basically make money, a small amount, and shift their water supply to something else, and it ended up hurting them, and they're dying from lead poisoning. The reality in this story specifically is that 75 were for this allowing Nestle to continue to pump more water, and the vast, vast majority of the population were wildly against it, yet it happened anyway. And that has to first show you the laughable idea of some kind of democracy taking place, like the people have any say in what actually happens, but to understand the profiteering at play here. In Michigan, where they're already having one of the most widely acknowledged issues in water sanitation and lead poisoning due to government actions, they still allow Nestle to pump more of their fresh water and allow these average individuals to have to use bottled water in their own towns. I mean, the story goes even deeper when you get into Flint, Michigan, and the idea that these people literally were refusing to pay their water bill because it was poisoned water, and then they shut the water off anyway and fined them for doing so. And they yet they're being forced to buy Nestle bottled water. It's so wild to see this play out, and the fact that most people are just pretending it's not even happening anymore. And this also goes much further when you understand, Derek Rose did an excellent article about this, showing you that the vast majority of water in this country is contaminated to one degree or another. And I'm not just talking about fluoride, which is huge in my opinion. I'm talking about lead poisoning and many other different things, chemicals in our water that are very dangerous. And it's just kind of being slid under the rug because it's an infrastructure problem that we continue to point out is a very big deal. Yet we continue to spend billions and billions of dollars on military warfare. And that has to show us where our true intentions lie. But again, this is a story that we should really be looking into and stand up for these people in these towns where Nestle is literally stealing their lifeblood. I mean, this is from the guy who openly said that fresh water is not a human right. That's the CEO. That's crazy to hear someone say that. Many people have acknowledged the fact that as we move forward, as we go further into where we're heading in the future here, that water itself is going to become a very huge commodity. It already is to a large degree, but it's something that's going to becoming more and more important to acknowledge. And I think that's why a lot of these organizations are beginning to buy up water rights and, you know, take control of these kind of things, because it's going to become more and more valuable. But again, the people are suffering. And yet we see no coverage of this in mainstream media, and it just continues on, even though these people are literally suffering for the actions of their very own government. And I don't see any democracy at play here, even though, you know, we've never really had a democracy to begin with, or a democratic republic, or whatever anyone wants to claim we originally had. It's never been that, in my opinion. I think this is a perfect example that we clearly don't have one now. Moving on to the next story, coming from ZeroHedge.com, Facebook sent top secret doctor to hospitals for patient data collection scheme. Facebook sent a cardiologist to several major U.S. hospitals to pitch a scheme that would combine a patient's medical file with user data collected by the social media giant in order to figure out which patients might need special care or treatment. That's horrifying to hear that actually said out loud. As recently as last month, Facebook was discussing the program with several health organizations, including Stanford Medical School and American College of Cardiology, yet pulled the plug after the Cambridge Analytica scandal. Now, first, this shows you that this was something they were very intent on carrying out, but when the scandal exploded, we realized they were mining our data, even though many of us had been calling the alarm on that for a long time, they decided to pull back on it because this is very Orwellian and very, very intrusive. They're literally there's many aspects to play here. First, this shows you that they think they know what's best for us, right? So they're going to use our own data, our own medical information, to then decide who needs help and who needs treatment. And this also lines right up with the idea of these welfare checks, which is something Facebook in the past has acknowledged they were a part of, literally calling the authorities to say, look, this guy might be a threat to himself for whatever reason. I mean, again, that lines up with the idea of conspiracy theorists and that it might be a mental instability. So they can come kick your door down with no warrant and say, we think you're a danger to yourself. You need to be institutionalized. And that we've seen it happen. It's literally played out just like that. But the fact that they were literally planning this trying to set these things in motion where they were going to get your medical information, combine it. I think the point of the story is not that Facebook was doing this, but that the government was doing this through Facebook. And I think that is where this has to lie in our minds, that we're seeing this play out, because clearly we can see the connection with Facebook and the government. I mean, it literally is an arm of the government at this point, the way that it's been working out. And we're seeing the data collection and the files being built on everybody. And now we can see where this was going before this scandal broke, that they were trying to gather our medical information and combine it with everything they know and literally use it to decide which one of us are a threat, which one of us need treatment, who needs to be forced medications upon. I mean, all these things are very alarming to see. Clearly, you know, you could make the argument, oh, well, it never happened, so why are you worried about it? But it gives you an insight into what they're trying to accomplish with all of the data that we think we're spreading with our friends, but in reality, it's being used against us. And again, that has to stand out to us in so many different ways. Moving on to the final story of the day, coming from RT.com, Abby Martin interview, critical of Israel, is blocked by YouTube in 28 countries. An episode of Abby Martin's Empire Files featuring journalist Max Blumenthal and spotlighting rising militarism in Israel has been blocked by YouTube in 28 countries, including Israel and the UK, for violating, quote, local laws. YouTube has claimed that it removed my interview on Israel-Palestine with Abby Martin to comply with laws in 28 countries. However, nothing I did or said in this discussion was even remotely illegal, even in countries with the strictest hate crime laws, Blumenthal told RT in an email. My comments were based entirely on my extensive journalistic experience in the region, and my analysis was clinical in nature. At no point did I denigrate anyone based on their faith or ethnicity. Blumenthal said that his comments were motivated by a strong opposition to Israel's systemic discrimination against Palestinians and his dedication to equal rights for all. He called the YouTube's decision a political one and likely made under pressure from powerful pro-Israel interests. The video in question is from 2015, so this is clearly a blanket attempt to whitewash history as well as the current perception of the war crimes taking place in Gaza. Blumenthal said, quote, the trend of censoring material that presents Israel in a less than favorable light has only intensified as establishment attacks on critical voices expand. The latest episode confirms my view that the pro-Israel lobby and its willing accomplices in Silicon Valley present one of the greatest threats to free speech in the West. Even if YouTube believes what he is saying in this video is inaccurate, even if what he said in the video was patently false, the fact that YouTube feels it can allow the video to be blocked in 28 countries with no actual guidelines being broken is censorship in its purest form. They simply see anything critical of Israel as anti-Semitic, and it is then flagged for removal. That should show us all we need to know. As the saying goes, to know who truly rules over you, simply find out who you are not allowed to criticize. For more information on the topics discussed, make sure you check out thelastamericanvagabond.com or any of the important independent sources in the show notes below. And as always, question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.